If you take two identical pieces of welded steel and hit them with the exact same force at the exact same temperature, they should break the exact same way. I mean, that feels like it should be a fundamental law of the universe, right?
You would certainly think so.
Yeah, because it is steel, after all. We build our entire modern world on the assumption that it is the ultimate predictable material. But it turns out that assumption is entirely wrong.
Completely wrong, yeah.
Sometimes one piece holds incredibly strong, taking this massive impact, and the identical piece right next to it just, shatters into pieces.
And in the world of engineering and infrastructure, unpredictability is the absolute enemy of safety. I mean, think about the stakes here.
Right.
We are talking about the structural integrity of a suspension bridge carrying thousands of cars a day, or a high-pressure pipeline running under a city.
Or like the hull of a cargo ship facing a winter storm.
Exactly. We need our materials to behave the way the math says they will, every single time. There is no room for maybe.
Okay, let's unpack this, because today we are doing a deep dive into a really fascinating paper. It's titled Microstructural Entropy in the Scatter in Toughness by researchers HKDH Padeshia and AAB Sugden.
It's a classic in the field.
Yeah. And the mission of this deep dive is to explore how these researchers looked at this massive, incredibly expensive engineering headache. Why steel is so wildly unpredictable. And basically solved it by looking completely outside of traditional metallurgy.
Right. They borrowed a concept from theoretical physics, which is just brilliant. They used entropy.
Which is wild.
It is. I mean, it's a brilliant crossover between disciplines. They took a concept that we usually associate with, like the grand scale of the universe expanding or the chaos of ice melting into water.
Right, the literal measure of physical disorder.
Exactly. And they applied it to the microscopic hidden structure of a steel weld.
But before we can even get to how they fixed the unpredictability, we have to understand how engineers were measuring it in the first place
Right.
and why their old methods were failing so miserably.
We really do.
Because, I mean, how do you even test the toughness of a steel beam before you put it into a bridge? You can't just hit it with a hammer and guess.
No, definitely not. So we should start by looking at fracture mechanics. When you are building critical infrastructure, you need to know the exact toughness of the materials you're using.
Right, specifically wrought steels and welded steels.
Right. And to figure this out in a standardized way, engineers rely on something called the Charpy impact test.
Oh, I've seen videos of this. It is surprisingly violent.
It really is. You basically take a small, precisely machined block of the metal, and you carve a little notch into one side of it.
So you know exactly where it should break.
Exactly. And then you swing a massive, heavy pendulum down like a wrecking ball to smash into it.
Just totally destroy the sample.
Yep. And that swinging pendulum is measuring how much energy the steel absorbs before it fractures. So if the pendulum smashes through the steel and swings high up on the other side, the metal didn't absorb much energy.
Meaning it is brittle.
Right. But if the pendulum hits the steel and stops dead, or, barely swings through, that means the metal absorbed a huge amount of energy. It is tough.
Okay, that makes sense.
And engineers do this at various temperatures because temperature completely changes how a metal behaves.
Oh, sure. A piece of steel might be incredibly tough on a warm summer day, but become dangerously brittle when subjected to freezing winter temperatures.
Precisely. So you run dozens of these impact tests at different temperatures, and you expect to plot a nice clean curve on a graph showing exactly how the metal behaves as it gets colder.
But that brings us to the villain of our story today, which is a phenomenon known as scatter.
Ugh, scatter. Scatter is terrifying from a design perspective.
Why is it so bad?
Because it happens when you run those repeated pendulum tests on specimens of the exact same material, welded under the exact same conditions at the exact same temperature, and you get wildly different results.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. The pendulum hits the first piece, and it absorbs a massive 100 joules of energy. Then the pendulum hits the second piece, cut from the exact same weld, and it fractures at just 10
To
joules.
put that into everyday terms, think about baking chocolate chip cookies.
Yeah. Okay, I like where this is going.
Let's say you use the exact same recipe, the exact same bag of flour. You bake them in the exact same oven for the exact same amount of time. You bake 10 batches.
Right.
But for some inexplicable reason, five batches come out perfectly soft and chewy, three batches come out like dry, crumbly hockey pucks, and two batches literally shatter like glass when you bite into them.
A highly unsettling baking scenario, but a perfect analogy. I mean, if you are a baker, that scatter in your results is annoying.
Very annoying.
But if you are an engineer designing a pressurized nuclear reactor vessel, that scatter is a crisis. You literally cannot trust the material.
So what do engineers do? If they know the steel might just randomly shatter, how are they building things safely?
Well, historically, they were forced into a very difficult, very expensive corner. They essentially had two choices.
Okay, what's choice one?
Choice one, they adopt overly conservative design values. They just assume the steel is always going to perform at its absolute worst, so they over-engineer everything.
So they make the steel plates way thicker and heavier than they probably need to be.
Exactly. Which costs an absolute fortune in materials and transport.
And choice two?
Choice two, they run an absurdly high number of those expensive pendulum tests just to establish a basic level of statistical confidence that they've found the true average toughness.
Man, it's a huge waste of time and money either way.
It really is.
And what Padacia and Sugden point out in this paper is that the ways people were trying to quantify this scatter-like, trying to put a hard mathematical number on the unpredictability, were frankly terrible.
The older methods were incredibly primitive mathematically. I mean, because engineers lacked better tools, they were just trying to rationalize the messy data points. Some would simply calculate the average of all the Charpy impact readings at a given temperature.
But taking an average completely masks the dangerous extremes.
Exactly. If you average a super strong piece of steel and a super weak piece of steel, the math tells you the steel is average, which is a lie that could literally cause a bridge collapse.
Yikes. So what did the others do?
Others would swing the complete opposite direction and only plot the absolute lowest readings obtained. They just focus purely on the worst case scenario.
Which is safe, I guess, but it ignores 90% of the actual data you just paid to collect.
Right. And then there was this one formula the paper critiques, a range formula some researchers proposed.
Oh yeah, I remember this.
It basically took the maximum energy absorbed, subtracted the minimum energy, divided that by the average, and turned it into a percentage.
That range formula highlights a fundamental flaw in how the industry was thinking. By focusing so heavily on the absolute maximum and minimum values, it gives a massive disproportionate weight to extreme outliers.
Yes, exactly.
Going back to the cookie analogy, if 9 cookies in your batch are perfectly chewy, but one single cookie somehow breaks your tooth, that formula takes the one tooth breaker and the single bed cookie and basically ignores the other 8 perfectly normal cookies.
Right. It only factors the normal ones into the denominator as an average.
Which is just bad math.
And as the authors of the paper point out, that specific formula also turns out to be an unpredictable function of the test temperature itself.
So it's useless.
Pretty much. None of these old methods were suitable for actual alloy design. If your math can't accurately describe the mess, you certainly can't use it to figure out how to invent better, more reliable steel.
So we need a new way to measure the mess, a mathematical baseline that accurately captures the deviance without being skewed by one weird data point.
And this is where the researchers introduced the concept of the idealized impact energy temperature curve.
Okay, tell me about this curve.
They reasoned that if you plot how much energy a piece of steel can absorb against its temperature, the scatter shouldn't just be accepted as a random, unreadable cloud of dots. Beneath that chaos, there should be an ideal curve.
Right.
And that ideal curve is sigmoidal.
Meaning it looks like an S-curve on the graph.
Exactly. An S-shape captures the physics of the metal perfectly.
Wow.
At really low temperatures, the energy absorption is low, so the line is flat near the bottom because the steel is brittle.
Right.
As you increase the temperature, you hit a transition phase where the line shoots steeply upward because the metal is rapidly gaining ductility.
It's getting softer and tougher.
Yep. And then, at high temperatures, the line levels off again at the top of the graph, showing a consistently high energy absorption.
And that top flat part of the S is known in the industry as the upper shelf energy.
Oh, right? Got it.
Now, I know discussing math on a deep dive can get a little dense, so we won't read the raw algebra they used to plot this out.
Probably for the best.
But conceptually, they built a formula. It uses natural logs and temperature variables to draw a mathematically perfect S-curve. They essentially modeled perfection.
Yes.
Oh, and a quick detail from the paper I found interesting. To make their math actually lock in and work, they assume that this upper shelf energy at the top of the graph is just an arbitrary 2% above the maximum impact value they actually recorded in the real world.
Yeah, that 2% assumption is clever. They found it stabilizes the curve beautifully across the temperature ranges they care about.
Nice.
And once they establish that perfect mathematical S curve, they finally have a baseline to measure the scatter. They calculate what they call the deviance.
Okay, how does that work?
Instead of just looking at the highest and lowest points, you look at every single real-world data point you collected from the pendulum tests. You measure exactly how far off each point is from that perfect S curve.
Okay.
You take that distance, you square it to emphasize the bigger misses and ensure all the numbers are positive, and then you just add them all up.
So deviance is basically the total penalty score for how badly the steel failed to be predictable.
Exactly. But they take it one step further. To actually compare different sets of data fairly, say a small batch of tests against a massive batch of tests, they introduce the scale parameter. You
Right.
find this by taking that total deviance score and dividing it by the degrees of freedom, which they define as the total number of data points minus two.
Okay, if I'm trying to visualize why dividing it matters, let's say I test 100 pieces of steel and you only test 10. My total deviance score is going to be way higher than yours just because I have more dots on the graph, right?
Right, even if your steel is actually just as predictable as mine.
So by dividing by the number of data points, this scale parameter basically normalizes the score.
Exactly. It quantifies the scatter entirely independent of how many tests you ran or the absolute magnitudes of the data. It gives you a pure number representing the unpredictability.
But wait, let me push back on this for a second.
Sure.
If you only have a few data points, couldn't this math easily lie to you? Like, if I only test three pieces of steel and plot those three dots on a graph, couldn't your fancy math just accidentally draw an S curve that perfectly connects those three random dots and then confidently tell me there is zero scatter?
That is a great catch, and the researchers explicitly guard against exactly that mathematical illusion in the text.
Oh, they do.
Yes, they warn that if only three pairs of data are provided, the deviance will falsely calculate to zero. The math will trick you into thinking the material is perfectly uniform just because it hasn't seen enough data to spot the chaos.
So how do they fix it?
To prevent this, they stipulate that a minimum of 10 pendulum readings per curve must be taken to ensure the scale parameter gives an honest picture of the scatter.
Okay, that makes sense. So we now have this bulletproof mathematical tool, the scale parameter, to tell us exactly how unpredictable a weld
We
is.
do.
But here's where it gets really interesting. Because math only tells us that the unpredictability is happening. It doesn't tell us why. If I'm an engineer holding a piece of shattered steel, I want to know what physical thing inside this metal caused it to break.
And to find the root physical cause, the researchers had to stop looking at graphs and start looking through a microscope.
Ooh, okay.
Their core theory is that scatter isn't just random bad luck or testing error. It is caused by microstructural inhomogeneity.
Meaning the weld isn't uniform on the inside.
Right. Think about the physical act of welding. You are taking two pieces of solid steel, blasting them with intense heat until they literally turn to liquid, and then letting that liquid pool cool down rapidly.
Yeah, it's pretty chaotic.
Exactly. And as that chaotic liquid solidifies back into a solid crystal structure, it doesn't form one single uniform pattern. The primary microstructure of common welds actually crystallizes into three distinct physical constituents.
What are they?
Well, they are all different forms of ferrite, which is just the crystal structure of iron, but they look and behave entirely differently. The paper identifies them as allotriomorphic, acicular, and Widmansteinite ferrite.
Those are incredibly dense terms. What do they actually look like if we zoom in close enough?
Imagine looking at a cross-section of the metal. Allotriomorphic ferrite forms in big, blocky chunks, usually along the boundaries of the original grains of the metal.
Okay, big block.
And it is relatively soft. Acicular ferrite, on the other hand, is a chaotic, interwoven pile of microscopic needles.
Needles.
Yeah, and it's incredibly tough because of how jumbled it is. And finally, Widmansteinite ferrite forms in these long parallel plates that shoot out like teeth.
Wow, so instead of a nice uniform block of material, a weld is actually this microscopic mosaic made up of blocky chunks, chaotic needles, and long plates.
Exactly.
I have to bring back my suit analogies because it's the only way I can picture this physical reality.
Go for it.
Imagine you are trying to make a perfectly smooth, uniform soup, like a blended puree.
Okay.
That would be a perfectly homogeneous metal. A crack trying to travel through that puree moves at a predictable speed.
Right.
But what you actually have inside this weld is a chunky stew. You've got blocky potatoes, tangled strings of beef, and long slices of carrots, the three different ferrets. It's highly heterogeneous.
I love that.
Yeah.
And because the mechanical toughness of these different shapes are so drastically different, hitting that metal with a pendulum is going to yield completely different results depending on exactly where the microscopic crack tries to travel through that chunky stew.
Oh, that makes so much sense.
Right. If a crack hits a smooth patch of blocky allotriomorphic ferret, the potatoes, it might slice right through.
Because it's soft.
Exactly. But if it hits a dense, tangled pile of acicular needles, it gets deflected and stopped, absorbing way more energy.
Okay, but if I'm an engineer looking at this microscopic stew, counting millions of microscopic potatoes and beef strings seems impossible.
Yeah.
How did they actually put a hard, measurable number on that messiness?
That is the genius of the paper and where they looked outside of traditional metallurgy. They borrowed a mathematical concept used in thermodynamics called the configurational entropy of solid solutions. Yes. Entropy is essentially a logarithmic measure of probability or physical disorder. They adapted this to create a brand new equation to measure microstructural entropy.
Okay, we won't read the raw algebra again, but how does an entropy formula conceptually process those three different microstructures?
The formula calculates disorder based on the volume fractions of those three types of ferrite. It essentially looks at how much physical space each ingredient takes up inside the weld.
Okay.
They use a logarithmic scale because it beautifully captures how probabilities and chaos multiply in complex systems. It mathematically penalizes the overall score the more jumbled and evenly mixed those three ingredients become.
So if the weld is perfectly homogeneous, say the metal somehow cooled into a perfect puree of 100% just one type of ferrite, the math would output an entropy of zero. There is no disorder.
Exactly. The entropy scale starts at exactly zero for a perfectly homogeneous material. But because there are exactly three phases of ferrite in these welds, the absolute maximum mathematical disorder occurs when all three are present in perfectly equal amounts.
Ah, so one-third potatoes, one-third beef, one-third carrots, to use my analogy.
Yes. In that scenario, the entropy formula outputs the natural log of 3, which is about 1.099.
Okay, so 1.099 is the absolute maximum disorder, the most chaotic that microscopic stew can possibly get. But 1.099 is a slightly awkward number to use as a standard metric, right?
It is, yeah. So the researchers applied a neat mathematical normalization to make the scale cleaner for engineers to use.
What did they do?
They took that raw entropy value and multiplied it by the reciprocal of the natural log of 3.
Which does what?
This perfectly compresses the scale to range from exactly 0 to exactly 1. They call this new normalized value HET3, standing for the heterogeneity of a three-phase microstructure.
Well, that's clean.
Right. 0 is perfectly uniform. 1 is absolute maximum physical chaos.
So we have the scale parameter, which gives us a hard number for how unpredictable the steel is when we smash it.
Yep.
And we have this new HET3 metric giving us a hard number for the microscopic chunkiness of the metal using the physics of entropy. But, you know, theory and math are great on a whiteboard. Did they actually prove these two things correlate in the real world?
That is the ultimate test of any theory. And yeah. Yes, they took vast amounts of data from previous studies on all weld metal specimens, specifically low alloy steel, where the weld is laid down in a single pass.
Okay.
They calculated the scale parameter for how wildly those specific tests scattered, and they calculated the microstructural entropy based on microscopic analysis of the metal's composition.
Mm-hmm.
Then they plotted them directly against each other on a graph, which is figure 2 in the paper.
And what did the graph show?
What's fascinating here is it was a massive, undeniable success. There's a beautifully strong, almost linear relationship on the graph.
Really?
Yes. When they ran the statistics, they calculated a correlation coefficient of 0.94 between the microstructural heterogeneity and the scatter in toughness.
Wow. 0.94.
Yeah.
For anyone who doesn't do statistics daily, that is incredibly high. I mean, in the messy physical world of material science, a 0.94 correlation is practically shouting at you.
It really is.
It proves beyond a shadow of a doubt that a huge reason why steel shatters unpredictably is directly caused by how microscopically jumbled its internal structure is. The higher the entropy, the messier the stew, the more wildly unpredictable the steel behaves when you hit it.
It is a profound validation. They successfully linked a theoretical mathematical abstraction of disorder from physics to a very real physical engineering problem in metallurgy.
I have to ask, though, does a model this clean always work? Did this apply to every single type of steel they threw at the formula, or did they eventually hit a wall?
Well, science is rarely without its complications, and they absolutely hit a wall.
Oh, they did?
Yeah. When you look at figure 3 in the paper, they analyze what are called multipass or multi-run welds.
What are those?
Instead of a single liquid pool cooling down, these are welds made by laying down layer after layer of molten metal. And with each new layer, it reheats and alters the structure of the layer beneath it.
Oh, that sounds complicated.
Very. They modeled this complex interaction as a two-phase microstructure, creating an Het II equation. But when they plotted the scatter against this two-phase entropy, the correlation completely fell apart.
Oh no, it was bad.
It was incredibly poor.
Why did it fail so spectacularly for the multi-layer welds when it worked like magic for the single-layer welds?
The paper identifies two critical reasons. First, in the specific data sets they analyzed for these multi-run welds, the actual physical range of the entropy was very small.
Meaning what?
Meaning all the samples had roughly the same level of microstructural disorder. And in science, when your primary variable barely changes, secondary variables will step in and completely dominate the results.
Okay, but what secondary variable could possibly override the crystal structure of the metal itself?
Inclusion populations.
What's that?
Well, when you weld, you don't just melt steel. You use chemical flexes and slags to protect the liquid weld pool from the oxygen in the air and control its stability.
Right.
As the liquid metal cools, tiny droplets of this slag can get trapped inside the solidifying steel. These are called inclusions, essentially large, microscopic rocks of oxide embedded in the metal.
Oh, I see.
And in the multipass welds, these rocks are not uniform in size, and they are randomly distributed throughout the layers.
So how does a microscopic rock ruin the math?
Because a physical rock trapped in a crystal lattice acts as a massive stress concentrator. When the pendulum hits the metal, the impact force travels through the steel until it hits one of those hard oxide inclusions. The inclusion cracks, and that microscopic crack instantly propagates into the surrounding steel, causing catastrophic failure.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. In the multipass welds, these random inclusions completely took over as the primary physical cause of the scatter, entirely overriding the subtle effects of the ferrite phases.
That makes perfect physical sense. If you have giant boulders of oxide randomly scattered in your material, the crack is just going to follow the boulders. It's going to break unpredictably no matter how neatly the rest of this stew is arranged. But looking at the core theory itself, I have to raise a critical pushback here.
Okay, let's hear it.
Doesn't this entropy equation have a glaring blind spot? It calculates disorder based strictly on volume. Doesn't that mean it treats all three types of ferrite as mechanical equals just because they might take up the same amount of space?
Yes. It is a highly significant weakness of the method, and to their credit, the authors are completely transparent about it.
Okay.
The entropy formula is purely volumetric. It calculates disorder entirely based on how much physical space the blocky allotriomorphic chunks, the acicular needles, and the Widman-Stettin plates occupy.
Right.
It completely and utterly ignores the actual inherent mechanical toughness of those individual phases.
Going back to our stew analogy, the math treats a chunk of soft potato and a tough chunk of beef exactly the same, purely because they take up a cubic centimeter of space in the bowl.
That's right.
But physically, hitting a potato with a spoon is going to have a profoundly different result than hitting a piece of beef. The actual physical strength of the ingredients has to matter.
It absolutely matters in the real world. Now, the text does offer a caveat for the multi-run welds, noting that the physical strength of the reheated underlying layers actually scales proportionally with the strength of the newly deposited top layers.
Okay, so the differences might not be as huge as we'd think.
Right. So the differences in mechanical properties might be slightly less extreme than we'd intuitively guess. But still, ignoring the mechanical properties entirely in the entropy calculation means the formula would falsely predict high unpredictability in a system, even if all the different structural phases magically shared the exact same mechanical toughness.
Wow. So it is not a flawless silver bullet that solves all of metallurgy.
No, it's not.
But it is still an incredible conceptual leap forward. Let's summarize this journey. We started with the terrifying reality that visually identical pieces of steel can unpredictably shatter, threatening major infrastructure. We saw how the old methods of simply averaging the test results dangerously hid those extremes. So researchers built a new mathematical S-curve and scale parameter to accurately capture every single instance of scatter.
And the crowning achievement is that they applied the thermodynamic physics of entropy to prove that a microscopic, chunky stew of different crystal structures is what physically causes the metal to behave unreliably.
Which is just amazing.
It is. Even with the known limitations regarding inclusions and multipass welds, the core conclusion of the paper fundamentally shifts how we view materials. It proves, with hard data, that if we want to reduce unpredictable failures, weld deposits must be engineered at the microscopic level to be as mechanically homogeneous as possible.
They used theoretical mathematical disorder to prove that we desperately need physical order. It is an incredibly elegant solution to a messy problem.
It really is.
And for you listening, it's worth thinking about why this matters far outside the walls of a metallurgy lab. We live in a world that is obsessed with big data and predictable outcomes.
Oh, totally.
We expect our supply chains, our software, and our physical infrastructure to work perfectly every single time we interact with them. But this paper is a stark reminder that understanding the hidden entropy, the unseen structural variations lurking beneath the surface of the systems we blindly rely on, is the only way to actually build genuine safety and reliability into our world.
You cannot hope to manage what you do not accurately measure. And sometimes measuring the chaos requires you to abandon the traditional tools of your field and borrow a lens from a completely different branch of science.
So I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over. If engineers can borrow the concept of entropy from physics to accurately predict the unpredictability of steel, what other complex, seemingly random systems in our daily lives, from the chaotic traffic patterns on your morning commute to wild, unpredictable economic shifts in the stock market, could be better understood if we just figured out a mathematical way to measure their microscopic messiness? Because just like that shattered piece of steel, the truth isn't found by looking at the average. It's hidden in the scatter.